sometimes it's beyond our reach. That's why the meeting is not starting. So we'll have to improvise. Honorable members, DG and your team, members of the media, you are all welcome to this session. We don't have the program, which is stuck in the machine, but I hope we are all aware why we are here. So I will just pause. Okay. We are here today to receive a briefing by the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development and the National Prosecuting Authority on their 2016-17 budget and plans. I hope we'll remember that budget are not just about figures. They have to tell us how they are going to fund our transformation agenda, because we inherited an apartheid state that we have been transforming from 1994. But I think we cannot be involved in transformation for another 100 years. We now have to radically transform. So our budget must also reflect the radical transformation that we want to bring about, because that radical transformation has got to ensure that justice is assessed by even our people that are in the remotest area of the country. That transformation has got to ensure that whilst we want convictions to increase, but we also want the people that are convicted to be rehabilitated and be reintegrated into society, so that we build a crime-free society. We ensure that there's a better life for all the people in our country. So we shouldn't just be administering institutions and systems without results. The results must be the well-being of all our people, a better life for all our people, and in particular the young people, because the majority of those that are convicted are young people. Now it means that even our correctional centers should be centers of excellence which produce out of criminals better people that can be productive citizens. So I have no doubt that DG and the team have always been alive to that vision, and that in their presentation they will be telling us how much progress they are making towards that end. And I thank you very much, DG. We are in your hands.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, honorable members, members of the media, colleagues. We are here to do that which the Chairperson has set out. Chairperson, with your indulgence, how we had structured the presentation was we were guided by the discussions we had with this Honorable House the last time we were here in February. And there were a number of questions that were asked in specific terms, but they were not questions that we could have just responded to without doing a somewhat comprehensive work to answer those questions. And some of the introduction of the chairperson speaks to some of those questions that were raised, which we would like to start with before we do the formal APP, so that at least we elevate them and see how the House continues to guide us. So that will be the first thing. The second thing, Chairperson, is that legally we will then go through the presentation of the APP and the strategy, and hopefully it will go quick because it's the things that we have been doing, and we are at the next level or the next phase of those. But the most complicated one would be the first document that I'm going to present. So that is the first issue, Chair. The second issue is related to governance. This document that we are presenting, as I have said, it required a lot of work, a somewhat substantive work that needed a lot of time. So we have not discussed it in its complete form. We have not discussed it with our leadership. So even as we are circulating it to yourself, we just want to take you to our confidence in terms of the work that we are doing. And then it is still going to go through an approval process, but we believe that it's not going to change materially because some of the meetings our leadership was being taken through these documents as we were working on them. Lastly, Chairperson, we wish to extend our CFO's apology. She has a bereavement in the family as of this morning, and I took the liberty, and I do apologize for that, to excuse her from these proceedings. I do think that seated amongst us, we are able to speak to her section of the work. Thank you.
We accept the apology and send our condolences to the family from this committee.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. The first presentation, therefore, talks to big strategic and legislative initiatives that the department is working on. The first one, obviously, will be a policy on traditional courts, which was discussed extensively yesterday. And Chairperson, some of the responses we are going to be providing will also be responding to some of the issues that were raised in the meeting of yesterday. We took copious notes, and those that we are not able to respond to, we will provide additional responses to. So we will deal with the policy on traditional courts. We will deal with the traditional courts bill as was known by this committee. We will deal with the issue on paralegals, which we will be proposing a process on how we arrive at a policy framework. The prevention and combating of hate crimes, as the chair articulated today, relative to the criminalization of racism. We will talk to the National Action Plan, and we will talk to the inclusion of indigenous languages in the LLB curriculum, the policy on implementation of language of code of records, the two are somewhat related, and perhaps once we are there, we will also show this Honourable House the financial horizon that we are operating under and the choices that must that we must be assisted as the department to make in relation to that, as well as the undesired consequences of some in the short term anyway, whilst we are working towards a long-term policy outcome. And then the policy framework on alternative dispute resolution on the alternative court administration, as well as the policy framework on the court annex mediation. So what is the purpose of this presentation? We want to provide the timeline on all of the documents that I have already spoken to as was required by this Honorable House. We provide the timelines, we provide the responsible managers, and that is why in a long time we have not brought so big a delegation before this Honorable House. But we did that as per the instruction in the last meeting, that the committee would like to see that these people are not a myth, they do exist, and they are here. So when they are given an opportunity, they will respond to the questions that the Honorable House will put before them. All the proposed timelines are realistic as we are making them, Chairperson, but we are also very mindful of the shifting sand, because where we are sitting, the sand is shifting very fast. The economy is refusing to stabilize in a manner that we can say we, our numbers are dependable and are credible. And as a result, if the sand continues to shift at the level at which it is shifting, it will definitely affect the timelines that we are putting on the table. Because as the rand weakens, perhaps we will also have to relook at our budgets in terms of the budget cuts. So we ask the Honorable House to consider that as one of the biggest dependents in the document that we are presenting. Now, there is a short discussion that I think Advocate Kosana, who I forgot to introduce to you, Advocate Kosana has been promoted or appointed as a Deputy Director General heading court services. You would thank you.
Congratulations, Honorable Kosana. Actually, we were about to demand that we be promoted. Because so we were preempted.
Well deserved.
Thanks.
So we can see your mind. So even when we don't, please do know that we do. So the second announcement I would wish to make is that we will be joined by a female DDG who is going to be heading constitutional development. She is not going to join this month of May. But she has already been appointed. We are sorting out a few things with UPSA. Otherwise, she will be joining us as well. So Advocate Kosana will then lead a discussion on the policy framework, as well as assisted, obviously, by Ms. Kiley, who has legislation on the legislative part of this program. So, Chairperson, perhaps before I proceed, let them start, because this is one of the biggest issues that this committee has dealt with. Thank you.
Thank you, DG. Proceed, Deputy Director General J.B. Kosana.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, DG and colleagues, and I'm very much humbled by the accolades, and I really hope and believe that I'll give them a good shot, and also rely on the guidance of those who have been ahead all the time for the experience and knowledge. Chair, yesterday when the minister presented, we also noticed that there was a gap in terms of articulating where we were with some of the major policy reforms, and so that this kind of articulates why we have kept shifting the goalposts, which obviously has not been augured well for all to whom we've made commitments. But we thought we can just give a few perspectives of what we're doing. Chair, you recall that the minister did articulate that there was an engagement to really refine the bill. We were mindful that it was not wise to reintroduce the bill as it is, because it was going to create the impression that this government is not listening. In into a government came, the department came for the national for parliament in 2017, the people spoke. In 2012, we reintroduced the same bill on the understanding that the same bill will basically find its way through that parliament will sift and do those processes. But we were accused again 2012 in the hearing that you are not listening. So we thought that to assist and facilitate the process of fast-tracking the bill, it's basically to highlight a few points which would have taken care of from that consultation process which has happened through Parliament also. So how we sought to do that, briefly we sought to basically the minister convene a policy dialogue, and that took place between the 29 November, the 3rd of December and the 4th of December. 29 November, 31st November and the 4th of December. And the policy dialogue was basically intended to check, to inform the constituencies where we are and how we sought to address all the concerns. We met both with the institutional traditional leadership, communication with the contralists, our national house of traditional leaders and provincial houses, and there was also consultation with the NGOs that have come to parliament and raised views points when the bill was introduced, etc. The conducive, the consultation was with a view to understand the expectation of each constituent out of the planned dialogue, to enable the minister to anticipate crucial viewpoints that would be raised by his stakeholders, to also articulate how what progress we've made in terms of that bill, etc. Next slide. Yeah. That consultation process was not even about us shifting the post. Was basically aimed at of assessing certain positions that have been achieved all this time, which arise from the constitution. One, it was made clear from the dialogue that transformation of traditional court is a constitutional imperative. It arises from the constitution. It must happen because we are in a new order. There was no way that the new order could continue to operate under the Black Abolition Act of 1927. That was made clear. Two, it was made clear that customary law is a living law. And it's part of our legal system. It's not important whatever. In fact, we said in that dialogue that if there's one system which everybody found here when they come in 1652, it was the law by which the people here lived. So there was no way that we could shift aside that system in favor of the other system. The Roman Dutch law, the common law from the English to the English region was basically formulated and developed alongside customary law. We all know that it was not given its prominence during the colonialism and apartheid system, but it was a law that existed. Hence, the Constitution acknowledged that law, and that law must be transformed because it is the law by which the people of this country live. You can't displace that law in favor of a foreign system. But what the question says, it says it must be transformed to promote the objective of a democratic society. And I think that is where the focus should be. That we are not including the law as it was found as it existed in 1818, etc. But it must be brought in line with what the constitution of this country demands, etc. And that is a task that the Constitution assigns, one, to the courts of law, but two, to all other structures within society, not only courts. So the Constitutional Court should not have a monopoly of customary law. In fact, they may not know it better than the people who live by the system in the area. So those people there, they've got the same role and responsibility from the court. And what government must do must create an environment so that they can transform the system. There must be research, there must be capacity by those processes. The bill seems to be really provide a conducive environment for customary law to be transformed to the best system that fits today's constitutionalism, etc. It was also explained that although certain states of customary law are changed by jurisprudence, it is also important scholars and writers emerge from themselves to emulate ancient philosophers who developed Roman Dutch law system, etc. It was made clear by the minister that the Roman Dutch law that you read here was developed by Fulton abundant, but must be improved in terms of moving forward, etc. Now, what we then say is that there are clear principles that should inform the new legislation, the revised legislation. One, there must be an acknowledgement that the Constitution recognizes customary law and provides mechanisms for its development. So the legislation must provide for that in terms of that. Two, next slide. And yet we must therefore build the legislation and the regulations which cause the system. We acknowledge that the current arrangement is unsuitable for a dogma system. As we see now here, there are customary law, more than 1,800 of them are sitting across the country. But they are not guided. They've got no clear law in terms of which they operate. And they still operate with the snippets of the old systems, whatever, and some of which were implemented by the various provincial legislation. You know that we have received the Parliament and the Minister have been served with summonses by a contract letter on the case that involved King Galindo, that we, Parliament, has failed to enact laws since it came into operation in terms of to regulate international courts, etc. And in that response, I can say that we, the Minister, articulated that not just the thing, there have been processes, there have been attempts, and we are still on course to the legislation, and that attests to the constitutional requirement in principle that they must be transformed, there must be law that regulates them. And also, it came out from those meetings that there was good wind to address the concerns that were raised during the introduction of the bill into Parliament. Now, all those processes, we believe that they were going to help smooth the process of the introduction, the process of the bill, because although Parliament was still engaged in controlling processes, from a policy perspective, it's important that even the department and government just understand how they respond to those policies as a process that would assist cabinet moving forward decision. And there were also clear understanding that we need to come with a minimalist approach, in the sense that there must be law before the table, which can be capable of being improved with time as we move along, etc. But we cannot have any law, or we cannot have a system where the international courts complain about what they implement now. Because when people came and complain that international leaders are abusing their powers, international system has over-constitutional powers, they impose sentences, they send people out of their home state, whatever. It's simply because there's nothing that guides those leaders that there as they sit today, etc. And we felt it's important that now it's important that we have at least moved with those NGOs, that they all now understand there must be law. Unlike before. Before, they came here and opposed even the dispensation. So they've gone to town just to make sure that they understand that the Constitution requires law to be enacted by Parliament to bring the special court in line with the dispensation. Right, next slide. Okay. Now, yeah. Next slide. Yeah, now, here the fundamental principle where there was no consensus. One, there is consensus that the system must allow equal participation of women, because that is required by the Constitution. And we have also made strides in terms of how that must be accommodated. And we said in the bill, one, the bill must not set out the code. It must not say 50-50 women participation in the courts, because they are not going to be there. Because there are stereotypes that must be worked through, there are practices that must be worked through the process. The bill must put positive measures to advance and protect the participation of women in international courts. So there will be education programs for international communities, there will be empowerment programs, there will be training programs, there will be provincial registrars of international courts who will make sure that all the gender-based prejudices are removed from the system and purified to advance and promote equality. And that is a positive step that the bill will advance, rather than say women must participate. We also say how they are going to be encouraged and empowered to participate. The bill will recognize levels of dispute resolution across the social justice system, which happens every day. Every day now that disputes are being solved by families, that this will be solved by 8 men and 8 women, that this will be solved by the federal court, to the ordinary court. Just imagine if all those disputes that are resolved at home, and then the families were going to go to a mother court, we'll be very far. We won't be making any progress in terms of the court. And that's what the chaplain has said. He said, there's always been a traditional justice system, a traditional way in terms of resolving disputes, which must be improved and enhanced and supported. Whether you are going to extend them to the form of community courts, whatever, where elders sit and resolve disputes, whatever, it's what has been developed over ages, and it's what must be preserved, because it advances the notion of access to justice as we know it today. There was big issue during the parliamentary hearing about the judicial boundaries. The bill, as was introduced, seek to demarcate the powers and jurisdiction courts in line with the old tribal authorities boundaries. And we said, perhaps we should keep the system's name, because the system is consensual. If people go, they go, they consent to resolve the dispute here, etc. Don't build borders for them. They can only give you a consent in Babylon. If all those people come from Babylon, it's a special justice system, they should have them in Babylon. You tell them that, no, because we must go to the old Siabus, or that's where you find your chief, whatever. You are trusting the system, etc. So the system is making a way that it should respond to people's needs, not respond to how it was confined to serve certain ethnic groups in terms of the law, etc. And that was lesson. And the bill which you see here will be crafted in a way that promotes the community moving forward, etc. Next. Yes, there was this issue, you know, and we have spent days and days around this. We've been invited experts from customary law to come and assist around this process. During the BAA, for the first time, criminalized what was traditional courts and created a system which was operating parallel to magistrate court decision. But traditionally, there's no distinction between civil and human law. But a dispute that comes to the court because they want to find resolution to move forward, etc. And people at home, they are not interested how you transfer it, etc. Whether it's your stock which have gone over the other grazing land to graze the middle of the other person, whatever. They are not interested whether you want to transfer in terms of the trespass act and whatever. Or they say, look, in common time, my beast has jumped over and has damaged the crop of your neighbor, etc. And the focus, therefore, should be how we resolve the dispute in that sense, not how we can resolve the dispute in the sense that we do it in terms of the modern court system. Because here, in the modern court, you go to a different court, you have not understood that platform, you get chased away and penalized in court, etc. They don't have time to advise you. And you tell them that in the traditional court system, because it's a system that seeks to assist and assist people, etc. They normally don't chase people away. They go the long way to try to assist the people. That's why even they make jokes and say, "Lapa na Twitter." If they can't convict the complainant, they accuse them convict the complainant. In the special court, you must prove your case. They dismiss it. They don't dismiss people. They try to assist where the fault is and try to find their house. When they live there, they must find a balance between the two people and the community. And those are various systems which are not the Criminal Procedure Act of 1977, which are only the Central Courts. That's why we have said one of the importance of the Central Courts is that it closes a gap which is there in the modern justice system. If my standing law doesn't take all the ball, it's not a test in terms of the government. I cannot go to the issues of this. They will not take the bona, all of them. They will only take deposit, and you tell my daughter is gone, it's not working with me. They must go to the local get assistance,
etc. Actually, if you have not finished paying, your son can still pay when he grows up.
Yes, and all those things, you won't find closure in the modern court. There they open the Criminal Procedure Act. They read what is there. If it's not in the catalog, you change it away. They say, no, we can't help you. If you go to a lawyer and say, I want to claim on this, they say, no, it's not a cause of action in the law of the land. But the special courts are not focusing on those, they are focusing on how to rebuild society, to bring reconciliation and harmonious system, etc. Now, who says they don't want this system? That's why we came out of those discussions with all of us agreeing with us that we need this law. We do not understand we need it. It's only to what extent Mankala issued a special. So the issue of opting out and also has been taken care of at the end of the day. Legal representation. We say, legal representation, do we understand this? It's in terms of people who have been admitted either as advocates and attorneys. That is required there. Because the purpose there is not to take people to jail, but they were to find peace. Lawyers are appointed to explain and interpret the law and present your case before charges, and there they interpret the law as it's written, whether it's the rule of law, or whether it's the constitution, and whether the police eventually is common law. They are appointed to interpret that exactly. They are less interested about finding closure between the people, etc. And that is the gap this court should see at the end of the day. That's why even we are introducing in the current system the whole program of diversion, whatever, because the legal system is becoming more considerate. They're not just your way because you can't resolve the matter. They must try to find out how can we resolve you and divert you to a proper structure that can help you. And that is what has been the features of the federal justice system all this time along. Sanctions. We all came to understanding that what comes to be known to the community sanctions have got their origin in traditional law. That you must apologize, that you must have a cleansing ceremony. So that there's peace at home, etc. That is, peace must be slaughtered. And people must find peace and you must shake hands. All those are not explained to jail. They don't know where you come from. They just send this one to jail and then the other one goes home. But the chiefs will basically come and say, hey, go and call the uncles, whatever, so that you can find peace in this made, etc. And order them to go and slaughter a sheep and also to go and save the ancestors for what they have done at the end of the day. And people live upon this very system. And the Constitution allows them to live upon this very system. If I believe that for me to find peace at home, I need to get this thing, and the Constitution allows me to do that, why do you think I will long the Michael? And that is fine to get there, to get the closure in the alliance, etc. That's why we say there was no, the NGOs who came to us and argued that the law was not required. We don't understand a democracy. They talk of a people democracy. But the African democracy, the recognized African value system by which people live at the end of the day. Actually, there was a point that was discussed that the current arrangement in terms of which the judgment or the orders or the resolution of the traditional court get appealed to a magistrate court is a misnomer. Because the magistrate court has studied LLP advanced and UNISA, and most of them may not even have studied indigenous law, etc., because they're an elective subject, etc. How do you want them to come and do appeal over the issue of Lobola and the issue of Isonto or Damit? Do you understand it? In the traditional law, Isonto is not maintenance. It's when you have represented a woman without the issue of marriage and all those things. They have an opportunity, a way of dealing with the case before the court, etc. But what we are saying is that all those things are not part of the ordinary mainstream court. So the court cannot resolve them. If you take them away, they close an avenue which continues to exist. And not only in South Africa. In Canada, they've got the justice system. They allow the minorities to still find help and solve their own matters. We are only 20 years old. We want to erase the systems which we have all lived by it, which they were found here in this country. Accountability. There was an issue that, to the extent that there were complaints about certain traditional leaders having to overstep their authority and power, whatever, the law must recognize that every board looks at public power is accountable to the constitution. Because you can't just be use the advantage that we go to work our and you that nothing can you cannot be touched because we are born a leader, etc. All people have got rules by which the constitution and constitutionalism dictate that people shall live or shall exercise power as determined by an instrument called the constitution. And if you go beyond that in constitution, you have received your power. That's why the constitutional supremacy means that you are constitutional supreme. It binds a judge, a traditional leader, everybody across the system, etc. And that must be clear from the constitution. Now, there were two aspects that were very clear, that we need to create officers of registrars to assist promote this system, create a new value system, be educated.
professionals, empower women, make sure that there's no distortion of the system. And that's what the institute requires at the end of the day. Next slide. There were a few aspects which were self-verifying, in which there was no clear agreement. One of it was opting out. They were understanding that the system as it was, because before 1994, under the PAA, people could not opt out of the traditional justice system. It was not consensual, it was imposed, because at that time, traditional institutions were manipulated to advance the same value system of the country system. Currently, we are saying the bid must provide a mechanism that to extend that people may find closure and recourse elsewhere else. They must have the right to do so. And we believe that's an area where we have to sit down and educate traditional leaders to understand that when the court talks of an access to court, this is the reform of the Constitution, it provides everyone with a time that you can have a choice to advance and pursue our methods through all this other system. And we gave an example about how Section 4 has become used as beneficial to labor methods. Just imagine that if there was never a proper system like the CMA, that absorbed millions of cases since they started, how many cases would be lined up in the labor court? People would still be waiting for a court run with no salaries because they've been fired from work, etc. But today they are able to go to the CMA. They can find an expeditious process to help you out, so you can find resolution closure. But it does not mean that you cannot go to court. It's a mechanism which is available. You go to CMA by choice. But if you go straight to court, without going to CMA, the judge will ask to sorry, did you try to go to the CMA to resolve the matter? And they advise you go there because it's quicker, it's cheaper, it's expeditious, etc. To go to the labor court, labor through court, etc. It was only through very strong involvement of the labor movement that they managed to get Shop Stewart to be representative at the court. It's not everybody, it's not every court where you find somebody without their best counsel and LLB stand up and appear. And that's what I understand the chairperson has to do in terms of all of practical. So that the administration can kind of bring up and get speedy justice, etc. But all those things must be built into that over time. So shops to us are able to go and stand up in labor court because it's a system that they've developed over ages, not only overnight, etc. And you can't dispense that outside because people are going to do that. So we want to create that dispensation as well. Then if you can't go to court, you must find a resolution quicker, expeditiously, and without putting money on the thing, without having to find a lawyer, etc. There was also the argument around the powers of traditional leaders. And we also agree that to extend that, I've said that one, the Constitution expects of certain public office bearers to meet non-system standards. It's important to set the powers that the traditional leaders can operate under, etc. Next slide. Enforcement mechanism. One debate which has gone through a debate through the consultation process was that if there's no policemen and there's no change, whatever, how do you enforce traditional leaders, the traditional value system, etc.? Because we are not going to respect the traditional system. We persuade the traditional leaders that enforcement is not only by change. There are many people who maintain their children not because they are mental damages for us. They do it because they have learned to accept that to be a good citizen, you must take responsibility for children, etc. So, traditional courts will need to inculcate a culture where people understand that for you to be part of a society at traditional community level, at the landlord, whatever, etc., there are certain values that you must subscribe to. And those values, those personal values, should prevail over all these other measures. And those are part of the evolution that we talk about. So there's no certain people that the certain just must not believe that if there's no policemen, if there's no change, if there's no court, their court will not be effective. They will be effective because we can make them effective. Hence the need for provincial, hence the need for budgets, refocus, resources, with buildings, right task, right about the system, education mechanisms to put into issues so people understand. We don't have, and I told them, we don't have a compulsory education system. but we do encourage children to go to universities, whatever, and they go to universities too, because those there's access to those systems. So we must provide establishment measures to promote access to justice, which can allow people to participate in the system, etc. Next slide. So we thought the person that given change will then provide a place why we come with this thing. Now, there's only one last meeting of the reference group. Out of the different dialogue there, we came out of the dialogue with a team made of both the international leaders, contra leader, and civil society. And we committed to them and said, since we are agreeing here, we are nodding heads, we are going to have a reference group, we are going to come up and they can agree on the principles that we should draft into law. And the people I mentioned there have been agreed to. When they come here, they can't come here before the parliament says, no, we have not been consulted. We don't know what the government is speaking about. We have consulted them. We have agreed on them on the principles. We have identified principles where there still need to be further engagement, etc. So parliament, when they find the bill, they'll basically know that we can focus on these 2 points. Because we understand that there are points where there's no agreement. And we can impose our own legislative authority given by the Constitution. But not start from fresh. That's why we say, Chair, by the time we come here, we hope that the process will be quicker because we've been dealt with most of the state work in the process. So the thing that we've put here is that obviously there's one meeting scheduled for the 22nd of April from the reference group. That meeting is going to sign up, is going to be presented with a draft bill, discuss the draft bill, present our views on the bill, etc. So when you come to Parliament, say, here's the bill. They have agreed into all sorts of terms, 18 and 19 and 21. So the Parliament can then be guided, and when they call for party submission, it's very clear what the issues are still in dispute at the end of the day. Two, we hope that after the 2nd of April, they will then set up the dates for cabinet, and the dates and everything that precedes the introduction will culminate to the next introduction by the first week of May or so. And those dates were put in because we now know exactly what the animal that we have been dealing with it is. It has taken a lot of time, definitely a lot of people, but we all believe, Chair, that by the time the pudding, by the time the bill is put here, the case will be put in. The portfolio firms should derive the benefit that half of the work has been done, and it should be that the bill should move very quick in terms of going to the logical conclusion of the bill, so that the 1,886 national courts that operate throughout the country, they've got a legislative framework that guides them in terms of resolving disputes that people go to them. We cannot stop you from going to the court. They go there every day. We must establish a framework and do hope that what we converse and discuss and the consensus point we have reached will take us a long way towards arriving at the process. Now, from that leading to community concern, we also believe, because both social courts and community courts are mechanisms of fact-checking justice, operation that people are not going to be lining up for the register to find a date, or they must go and find their lawyer whatever. We also believe that those principles that guide social communities should basically guide us in terms of how you get community courts to operate alongside social communities, independent centers, or even central jurisdiction centers. That's why we've been doing these two processes around the same formulation or so. And obviously, as I've said, the last, we are looking at April and May this year to have the bill before this House. And we hope, as I've said, that the process of going into was not in futility. It will assist to unlock what has been a challenge coming to this Parliament over the past two periods when the bill was introduced. Thanks, Chair, for the opportunity.
DG. We respect the doctrine of separation of powers, but if we are very mechanical about it, it can create unnecessary tensions. I guess if you were not matured, you and I would have fought a long time ago, because I thought that you were ignoring this committee, and the things that we raised are not taken seriously. But now I know from this presentation that you not only took the committee seriously, but applied your mind to the things that this committee was requesting. Because I think the presentation is a brilliant presentation. It's a presentation that shows that you have been leading the department in the right direction, giving the right instruction, and that your officials are doing the right thing. And, you know, if I was aware of this, I would not have made some of the remarks that I made yesterday. So I made them because of ignorance of the good work that is happening. But I'm not going to blame you. I want to blame the deputy minister, because he said he would invite me to the reference group, because if I had come to observe, I would have known that good work is being done, and not come and fight with yourselves because of the ignorance that I've had until now. So I want to congratulate you on this matter, and also congratulate Advocate Skosana for the brilliant presentation. I can see you're not reading, you're just talking to the issues with passion, because you know what you're talking about. And this is brilliant. Honorable members, before I open the floor, I just want to make one or two observations. You know, in terms of the rule of law, there's something called the principle of legality, which requires certainty. And the fact that for the past 22 years we didn't address this question of traditional courts has resulted in the challenges that Advocate Skosana has dealt with. But you see, that failure of the government to address this has led to the case that Contralefa has brought, because even in terms of the modern system, you would say that the law must be certain. Now, if you convict the king of the King Dalinye on what he has done under the indigenous law, which was not certain, because as government we have not made it certain, the question is that in compliance with the rule of law or principle of legality? And now we find ourselves in that situation. But I think that the fact that the court has taken a decision doesn't prevent us from discussing the jurisprudential issues, because if when you go to court, these things are still going to be raised. But I'm very happy that you are very clear on this issue. The other thing is, you know, when it comes to appeals, when we passed the this traditional governance, what is the full name? Traditional Governance Framework Act. We understood the traditional court structure within the apartheid or colonial framework, because all African communities are called tribes, which is wrong, because if you go to that system, you will have the head men or women, and a collection of head men and women fall under a chief, and the chief was actually, there's nothing called a chief in Africa. Chiefs are Mahosi, Dikoshi. Now, above the Koshi, which are chiefs, then you have the King of Kings. And now what we have done, we take the King of Kings and you say is the king. You take the king and you say is a chief. So there's a distortion of the system. And originally that system meant that if you cannot resolve the issue at a family level, you would appeal to the headman's court. If you are not succeeding, you would appeal it to the king's court, which you call the chief's court now. And the chief's court, if it's not done, it will go to the King of Kings. So I think we need to, but it's not your department, I think that's why we have to work with COCTA to revise. I think that transitional, that act has to be revised, because even the question of to whom do you appeal should not arise, because the so-called traditional court is seen as a tribal court, as if above it there's no other court. And that's why people were diverting this to the magistrate court, and you have really properly explained that you can appeal from one system to a system that is unknown to the next level. But I want to say that you have done a very good job. Honorable members, this is something that we have been waiting for. Honorable Mutapo. Yeah, Honorable Mutapo.
Thank you, Chairperson.
And Honorable Gongo, Honorable Mutapo.
Chairperson, let me also echo the same sentiment of congratulating the department for such a wonderful presentation. What impresses me, Chairperson, is that all those five critical issues which were raised previously, you know, you remember Advocate Kosan, issue of women participation, legal representation, opting out, naming, and so forth, presently they have been addressed. But I really have a very serious concern regarding the opting out issue. We're not trying to create two centers of power in the traditional community. If this issue of people opting out is allowed, subject to clarity. And then I again fully agree with you. You know, as of now, traditional courts, it's true, are relying on Section 12 and 20 of Black Administration Act. In our 22nd year of democracy, we still talk of Black Administration Act. So it means, Honorable Horn, if you come to Mutapo area and you commit an offense, therefore the Mutapo Traditional Council will be unable to summon you before the court in terms of the present setup. However, unfortunately, some of the traditional council are applying the same principles of the cause of action arose within. So you won't be able to gain justice. So what I'm trying to say is that it is true that in our 22nd year of democracy, we are, as South Africans, turned into a laughing stock for not having a concise legislation dealing with very pertinent issues relating to traditional communities. Therefore, we are denying those people really access to justice. Like Ishia, you made mention here, fortunately, in all traditional communities, the same principles, you know, legally, it's actually what about something like that. In terms of this Roman Dutch law.
Skhosana di tsena ka mashimong a Bongo. So even the traditional court setup, you know, it becomes so very interesting. Very interesting. That's why I say what the department is doing is really a very, very progressive move, and we encourage that. I hope that even nobody so bad is part of this. Thank you.
Honorable Bongo, we will be telling us about your captain.
Yeah. Also, and then I want to fully agree with you, Chairperson, on the issue of appeals. The appeal system, I think it should lie within traditional structures. Because presently, what is this? Is this such a settlement of Magistrates Act? The aggrieved party will presently appeal to the Magistrate Court. And unfortunately, we find that the person who will be presiding over doesn't even understand the customary law. He or she will mostly rely on you, keeping on telling you, normally, what happened? What is supposed to have happened? You see? So I fully agree with this issue of saying the appeal should lie within traditional structures. It's unfortunate in most cases, Chairperson, we find that in modern cases it would be easier. If both Hoshan and Hopo are not satisfied, residents of Hoshan and Hopo, if they are not happy with the judgment, they will then take it to Tabun, isn't it? So they are green. But in some setups, you know, the politics, it means if Bakakabamu Tabu are not happy, then it means we will have to go to Mpahen, who is our senior.
Mm-hmm.
But in other instances, there may not be such arrangements. And earlier on, you remember Advocate Kosana, the traditional communities or traditional leaders were proposing, what about having a similar situation as in Botswana, where there is an appellate court pertaining to appeal from traditional court. So have they abandoned that idea? Okay, thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Bongo.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. I think I would like to congratulate the department for all this good work done. I think we've gone a long way in terms of trying to find understanding amongst ourselves around these issues. I think the principle that we wanted to adopt around this was the Lusaka Wija principle. So that we are not going to solve all of the problems at now. What we need to do is just to get the car to go. As it is growing, then we'll be able to fix this and that, as we do with a lot of other legislation. Because we're still amending, repealing some sections in the Criminal Procedure Act and so on and so forth. So the Usekabija principle is the one that we must adopt in terms of taking this forward. One matter of interest, because we're now discussing constitution too much and everyone in the country. The issue of representation. The issue of representation, we may have to look at it very close, because I think the right to representation is a fundamental right. So we may have to find a way. We may have to find a way around the issue of the legal representation. So I'm just quite satisfied, Chair, that let's get everything moving. What I said about is in terms of covering a lot of other issues, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Bongo. Honorable Mazaki.
Thank you, Chair President. Thanks for the presentation. It's good to notice the progress that has been made in this regard and the effort that you have actually put into trying to pull this whole thing together. As you are talking, Advocate Kosas, I'm actually saying to myself, why don't I see you on TV talking to South Africans about this? It feels like we've got to do some form of awareness program. Because you might remember at the time we were going to discussing the bills, we're going to be having submissions and there will be comments from everywhere. But if what is good that we are doing is only known in this room, we're still going to have a problem. You need to have radio programs, you need to have TV programs on this. Let's have calling programs so that people call and they ask you questions and you answer the questions. Just to dispel all myths that surround this whole thing, so that by the time we start settling down and we're working on the bill, it doesn't become a problem anymore. And you need to actually also liaise with COCTA, because one thing that is also problematic that actually became contentious previously was the whole issue of the women's sector really giving an impression that it's a bill that's going to be promoting violation of the rights of women. And where it was coming from was because of the fact that, you know, they're feeling that the traditional councils are not representative of women. Regardless of the fact that COCTA has actually come up with the Traditional Leaders Sexual Act, which COCTA is actually implementing, but you are aware that the pace is slow. So that, you know, we have a balanced process. You talked about 50% representation of women, which is the principle that's supposed to be applicable, but that act does not actually talk to 50%. I think the percentages that I actually mentioned is about 41%, which can still be contested by the women's sector. So it's the things that we need to be alert to, that we need to start engaging on now, so that at the time we then start settling down and we want to work on the bill. We already have dealt with what we could see is a problem. And at the same time, I support the Kusekabuja principles. You've done good work. But it isn't like it's going to be easy to work on this. Because, you know, whatever we do half the time, we find that there comes a whole bag full of counter mechanisms. I'll give in South Africa the example of labor rights for the people of South Africa. You know, previously people were dismissed left, right, and center. Your employer could do anything they like with you. But then by the time we had good labor laws, then we started emerging the labor brokers. And people still find today themselves working like slaves. So we need to think of all of those possibilities which can actually become problems, which we should actually start addressing now, in order for us not to have to be faced with counter mechanisms. But I must say that awareness program is very important, because as long as our people don't understand this that we are doing, which we're actually saying is what will be most relevant in addressing their needs when they have problems, it's not really going to help. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Home, we are not operating under the Black Administration Act, so you are entitled to speak. Honorable Mtumlwane.
Thank you, Chairperson. I don't know what to say. What we regard as traditional court, customary law and all those things is not necessarily what it is. Mm-hmm. the dispute resolution system, African dispute resolution, was based on family. It used to be, let's say one man would be lucky to have been allocated about 5 to 10 ladies, and would probably have 400 to 500 children. And in Gulu of that particular family would assist the father in discourses amongst the members. That's a family. In this way, it starts. Then there will be an extended family. I'm bringing this history so that you understand the problems that are there now today. Then you have the extended family. Then the Ngulu of that extended family becomes the head. These are the problems that are very serious that you must attend. And then, there were no boundaries in that. Wherever you are, if you belong to that family, you would come and pay allegiance to that particular system. Then they came the colonialists. What they did, they narrowed. They just picked the head of one family in that area within the jurisdiction which they call the district. And then they put in somebody and they call, this is a traditional court. And all other families will have to pay allegiance to this particular. And they call him a chief. And they gave him certain powers. And these powers were, they call, customary law, which is not necessarily African customary law. It was what was said to be within, is understood and acceptable according to the morals of the colonial law. That is not repugnant to the law and morals. And they also narrowed it into removing the criminal law. So they made a distinction. You can talk about lobola and other things, but you can't talk about this. They also introduced the question where they would take a person from the society and put him in prison and take to him as an individual. Whereas in the African system of governance, you will include the family. They are supposed to be looking after the children, they are part and parcel of this thing. Now, you are taking an individual, you're putting him into court, are you guilty or not guilty? And so on. So their systems are different. Question. One and all. The other one. Then they decide who they can give the way they like to be said to be a leader in that area. They did not like him, they would remove him. And they would put, in fact, they appointed this so-called chief now, according to what they think is the correct thing. If you don't hold the land, get out. So they picked him people. So it's a question of appointees, most of them. Or those that are told the line of the community. Those who resisted were moved out or killed. Question. How do you... And these are different places. In the Eastern Cape, this is what has happened. In Natal, this is what has happened. In the Togo now, there's still the old traditional things that are in there. But in other places, they are not there. And some people do not recognize and don't want to be part and parcel of it. So it gives, they don't even recognize this shift, some of them. Where do you put in the traditional culture? who, what is regarded as customary. You need to investigate that. Are you going to say what has been regarded as by, has been put in at school, for example, by so-called writers like Goyan and others, which is purely not the same as African laws? Which one are they going to put? There is a question of which is a very sensitive thing of gender. Inkulu, by his nature, is a man. There is this thing in the constitution that you cannot discriminate in terms of race. What do you do in that? Are you going to say no? That Inkulu that has been put in here should not have been there. There has to be, and how do you address that? You need to look into that. So in other words, we still have to make more research. I'm not saying don't start with the thing, but I'm trying to show you that these things are different from area to area, and secondly, the impact of the colonialists in each area. And therefore we have that problem. And the other one was raised by Mem Mutab. What is the jurisdiction? Who is it going to say that because the and that I'm sorry, Mr. My neighbor here. I don't want to call his name. What's going on? Sorry. Is he going to be part and parcel of it? Or will he say, no, I must be, I must go to a court that recognizes my culture. This is not mine. Are you going to say that? And how are you going to play? So those are the problems that I just want to raise. I'm not saying, I just want to say there is more to do it. You need to attend to. Mr. Horn, I decided to surprise you. I'm sorry. Thank you very much.
Honorable Horn.
Yeah, Chair, hopefully my microphone still works, since not only me was baptized, but it as well by my colleague Mbuana. Yes, Chair, I think in listening to my African colleagues, I think certain very relevant issues has already been raised. My only input is to it that I think the department and us as a committee will really need the wisdom of Solomon if we are to find a balance between the individual rights contained in the Bill of Rights, which is part of our supreme law, and familial rights and community rights as largely embodied by the way I at least understand customary law. And while I think you were quite correct at the outset and previously in saying that if you read the Constitution, it's quite correct that when we talk about South African law, customary law, indigenous law was from the very beginning included, and maybe the reason why we've not had the necessary developments is simply for the reason that there will always be a tension between a body of law that deals with individual rights and those of families and communities. So that by way of input is that just that we will have to be very careful not to ultimately infringe on the rights of individuals, because whether we like it or not, ultimately that is the way the scales in our constitution is tilted towards the individual. And then also maybe in just latching on to the issues of jurisdiction and what the department calls the options of opting out, I think the very pertinent question is also that even if people living within the communities where these traditional courts will operate say, but yeah, I don't necessarily buy into the traditional way of living anymore. I think it will be also of constitutional importance to answer the question whether there's even an opt-out clause for people living within that community. So let's for a moment forget about me going to the community and committing a crime. But even within those communities, there's also a constant change. I don't want to say an evolvement. So that question should also be addressed. Thank you, Jay.
Honorable Mr. Advocate Kosani, before you respond, I just want to make some remarks so that you also can correct me. You know, I was a legal advisor of Queen Mujaji 5 and 6, and I sat in the Royal Council and in the traditional courts with my doctorate in law. Now, the court would sit with the majority of men there, and after they have decided, then I would go with one senior counselor to the Queen, report to her what has happened, what decisions have been taken. She would say, without writing anything down, just listen, she will say, I accept 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 people, and I will sleep over 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Now, sleeping over a matter means I'm going to think through the matter. But when she leaves there, she goes and sits under the tree with women, and those women deliberate over what men think they've decided. And when the Queen comes back to say, this is what I've decided, that's what illiterate women sit under the tree. And you, that's where wisdom applies. Because these women raise children, they understand the problem of society, they know what will reconcile the people or what will divide the people, the harmony that Ndadis Kosani was talking about. Now, where someone has got to be brought before the traditional court, they don't need police vans or the police. They have what they call the messengers of the royal court. They call them, in Ulobedu, they call them Maharul. They are recognized people who would come to you and say, you are wanted at the royal court. You can't resist because you live within that jurisdiction, your house is there, your cattle graze there, so you are obliged. These are the values that Ndadis Kosani was talking about. But when it comes to jurisprudence, you know, we talk a lot about individual rights and all these rights, but there are no human rights that do not derive from our common humanity, both black and white. Now, actually, I don't know why in this country, even before our courts, we should say the source of all rights, individual, what you call human rights, and people's rights or collective rights, they come out of our nature as human beings. And a human being is greater than color. That's why we talk about our common humanity. So maybe we should position Ubuntu, wood, our common humanity, as the source of our legal philosophy, of our jurisprudence, and that would be a jurisprudence that transcends race, color, gender, creed, and so on. But the mistake I think we're making now is to say Ubuntu is one of the values. Ubuntu is not one of the values. It is the source of all the values and the rights. But on the question of opting out, it is true. If you go into a Hindu community, there are certain things that are offenses there. Now, you commit a violate a Hindu law, you say you want to be tried under a Roman Dutch law. A Roman Dutch law does not recognize Hindu law. Or you go to an Islamic state, you commit an offense against Islamic law, you say you want to be tried under English law. That's creating two centers of power. So I think that in Rome, do as the Romans do. So when you get into another community, find out who are these people, what are their laws, obey their laws, and there will be order in the world. But I don't think it's for you to say we don't want opting out or we want it, because you were consulting. That's what came out. So when you bring the bill to Parliament, then we will engage further on that. So I don't think we should delay the legislation and say you must first solve that. But also on the appeal system, I think Honorable Mutapo has dealt with that matter, that it should actually lie within the traditional system. Because if you violate an Islamic law and then you want to appeal to the Hindu law, it cannot work. So the appeal must lie within the system that we are dealing with. There was a question about Busega wage. I think in that discussion, although you didn't use those words, you dealt with that issue. You know, when we say we have a working lunch or a working dinner, that concept, but also to say that you will never find a legislation that closes all the loopholes. You do, another advocate, Kosana, told us about minimalist. You do the basics that can help you move forward. And then you can improve on the system as you move on. But there was a question of legal representation. I think it was raised by Honorable Bongo. You see, introducing legal representation, it can also be problematic. Because all our universities teach Roman Dutch law and English law, and indigenous law is not compulsory. Where are you going to get these lawyers that are going to represent? And legal representation is based on adversarial system. But the indigenous system is not adversarial. You work together to find a solution. Actually, you find one person talking in favor of and at the same time against the person. So you seek, it's inquisitorial. You inquire into the truth or non-truth. So I think legal representation here really is not appropriate. But also, the people that go to universities now, they don't even understand the phrases. How can we say Gabweja? Where is food? Where is food? So, I think this also, DG, indicates that the question of introducing indigenous languages is very urgent. Because you see, these indigenous people, they use proverbs, idioms more often, and we find that idiom, the whole truth is there. But on the question of dialogue in the discussion, what was raised, I think you may get into trouble, because I see this as a process within the department, and we are still going to go to cabinet, and then from there the bill comes to us. I think at that stage, then we made a public debate. That's where you can feature, and then even ourselves we can use it to explain things, but it may be premature now. What that Mpumulwana raised is very true, but you see, there was a man called Shepstone. He operated in Natal. And you realize that when the British settlers came, 1820, they went into the Eastern Cape. Shepstone and the British settlers, they distorted everything. And the distortion culminated in the South Africa Act, which says those chiefs that do not agree with you, you dispose, you appoint others, and so on. And then the further development was the Black Administration Act, then the Black Authorities Act. So it's a history. So I think that if we can try to go back there, we will never move forward. It will take us another 100 years. So that's where the principle of Vusekaweja should apply. Let's say, DG, where you are, that's where we should move from. So the other things, we deal with them as they arise. Honorable Horn, I think you know the question of jurisdiction we dealt with. If you go to any community, you must abide by their laws. If you don't go there. You can't go into other people's place with your law. If you come into my family, you don't come and say, I'm a tabu, this is what we do. Then you must do what the mutehas do, and then you violate, the mutehas will deal with you there, and so on. Honorable Hall, this thing of individual rights is not absolute, because no man or woman is an island. So there are individual rights circumscribed by collective rights. So I agree with you that we need to find a balance. But I think for today, it suffices just to observe that we need a balance that will be the part of the debate that we engage with. So, Emma Jackie, you were not here when you said you have opened other areas that need engagement. But also Honorable Dumula. But if we were to say those areas which are legitimate that you raised, if we were to say, let's go back and... If we were to say, let's go back and deal with those issues, we would need another 50 years. So in short, I'm just saying that the department has succeeded to give us what we wanted and the basis of which we can move forward. I think if we can take it in that spirit, I think we should really, once again, Mrs. Play, I learn you are ahead of legislation. So the ball is in our court to make sure that the bill comes before us. But we want to thank you very much. I'm not trying to stop Honorable Hosanna from responding. Over to you.
Chair and honorable members, and I think I've taken note of everything which has been said, and thank you for also covering most of the aspects. I can just say that when the bill is brought to, is taken to cabinet and brought here, it will also be brought with an accompanying report that indicates a consultation, even some of the very important research you relied on. You will see, we have studied a well-researched paper written by retired Judge Albi Sex regarding the origin of Ubuntu and the source of African justice system. And that how even today's legal system borrows a lot from that dispensation, because this is the only system based on humanness, Ubuntu, and basically goes to an extent of explaining concept that in the traditional sense, humanness implies that there's no individual, they only move from a basis that we're talking about. You are a human being because you live amongst people, and you are a chief because you've got subjects, etc.
And all those concepts that basically have even refined the legal system, etc., moving forward. And I think we basically present a very holistic picture with the paper that you have been prepared. And I would want to deal with one aspect of opting out just briefly. Honorable Matak, what we have come up with is that we cannot look at opting out without looking at opting in. Because the dispensation should not provide a free for all. You go there as and when you want to get benefits, but you are not going there to support the system, etc. And those were the well couched in terms of the bill process, etc. And it will not, the subject and the clause will not basically be reading opting in. It will basically be put in a manner that people have a choice to advance whatever dispensation. But once you have made a choice, you can't take the choice selectively and say, look, I'm now opting out. Once you're in the middle of the proceedings, you have wanted to pass the system, the system has started, etc. Now you all of a sudden want to go out of the system because you see that it's going to change, it's not coming to our advantage, etc. So all those checks and balances, we have canvassed them and discussed them thoroughly in the process. Two, I wanted also to allude that the traditional affairs department is part of the process. In fact, the reference group is chaired jointly by Deputy Minister John Jeffrey and Deputy Minister Obed Babel. And since we have engaged with them on the advice of this Honorable House, they've also derived some benefit. In fact, they've come to us that certain aspects are very important to revise this framework act. That's why in the International Affairs Act, they are moving away from some of the principles which have never worked. And I think that kind of discussion and discourse have helped us to identify quite a number of things that we can take forward in terms of that. I want to talk about the issue of commission media, but we thought that obviously the chair, once the bill has been introduced, whatever, there will be enough publicity around the issues. And as I said, that we are going to publish both the bill and the report, so that basically it can provide basis for deliberation on the bill and people can understand where we come from, etc. And I'm sure that like previous times, the construction was one bit old. People will say, no, we did participate, yes, we understand. The only few things that we still need to touch on, we still need to best way around, etc. But we'll take note of that. The last point I wanted to touch are those points which are raised by Honorable Dumiwana, which I think I will spill out. But firstly, you ask where is the traditional court system within the current different systems in the provinces. Now, there's a very interesting point in this constitution. Firstly, Chapter 12 recognizes customary law. And among all the laws which are there, separate laws, the Constitution makes recognition to customary law, common law, which must be developed. And unfortunately, it's the only system that makes recognition to Roman Dutch law is what we call our prison system today, the court. The judicial, it's a jurisprudence. It's not yet. It's a jurisprudence. And the question acknowledges the need for customary to be developed. But when you read the interpretation clause in the Constitution, it says every court, every tribunal, and every forum, when it interprets any law, it must promote the value system that supports and promote the objective of the Bill of Rights. Why? Because the Bill of Rights is the cornerstone of the democracy in South Africa. All these other clauses in the Constitution provide the governance structure, how the prison structure should operate, but the Bill of Rights creates a new democratic system. And that's why the Bill of Catalan Law is providing the system. And therefore, as I said earlier on, the duty does not lie only with the courts. But these people must not, those people that shape the value of the are the chief, who are the custodians of the value system, if we don't do their part. The question of course will develop it for us. And the criminal court will rule on the basis of what is easily ascertainable. They're not going to go deep and search whatever. They will even be led by the papers of the wise lawyers who present the papers to the criminal court, and they will tell you the truth and say, no, based on what has been argued, we believe that the woman cannot then pay to achieve criminal whatever, or equality, all of them, whatever they must, because it's not ascertained. But who is the custodian? Therefore, those people who live every day under a tree, who are not worried about the flashy buildings, who are not worried about the aircons who are reaching, but you find the way of resolving disputes every day, and then put them cases, that the ones who put them cases because they must get more S&T. Those are people who are the customers of the system and cannot use them in the system. We must be those people because it can only be developed because they understand the system. And it's from that basis that those people must go to school and teach the system, so that they generate new aspects around the system. And that's the way we can all understand the system. Otherwise, if we don't understand where the money has been come from, etc., you want to commercialize it, and it's going to give us problems and people will start exploiting the system, etc. But what I wanted to say, Chair, is that we have taken into account, and the minimum support will also provide those arrangements, etc. The last point is that I think the Constitution provides customary law as one of the concurrent legislative competence with the provinces. And the bill, the minimum bill, is going to allow the provinces, in terms of cases and in terms of Western, Eastern Cape, whatever, to accommodate those peculiarities that are only applicable in a particular system. So they can be developed and respond to best practices and characters of the community. As the chairperson has said, if you are in the Eastern Cape, you first ask how the courts are doing around these issues before you basically impose your own system and impose it everywhere. And the bill must recognize that, obviously allowing the whole cosmopolitan of the progression of the system to the benefit of the development of the system, if there are lessons to learn from other systems, etc. But we have taken note of the issues which have been raised, and we appreciate the guidance, and we look for, and we say we are just on the verge of getting all the work that we have been working on to come here and through Parliament, and we hope that we'll have the opportunity when we come here to basically express. Thanks, Chair.
DG, you want to say something? In summary, I can say that the department fully understood their brief, that there's a need to transform the legal system as a whole, and they started with the transformation of the judiciary, which they have done very well, and what remains are really the nitty-gritties. And we want to congratulate you on that. But also, I think the department now has shifted the focus from the judiciary to the entire legal system, including the indigenous African law. I think what remains is that we need to decolonize the legal language, because law can be classified as a statutory law or common law. And now when we talk about indigenous African law, we continue to say customary law, I guess because of the wording of the Constitution. But whether it is English common law or Roman Dutch law, these are customary laws. Just as indigenous African law is customary law. So the name does not suggest the superiority of the one to the other. So African customary law is not inferior to Roman Dutch law or English common law just by name. All of them come from the customs of the people. And you know, every legal system, especially those that are rooted on the customs of the people, derived legitimacy from the fact that
they evolve through time among the people. You don't need the police force and the prisons to enforce them, because they are part of the cultures of the people, the way of living of the people. So I think that also when we deal with the Bill of Rights, there's a tendency that Bill of Rights comes from the French Revolution or the American Revolution. There's nothing like that. The Bill of Rights comes from our common humanity. For instance, in South Africa, it was in 1921 that the third president of the ruling party, Richard Mahabane, said that African humanity has been degraded, and that the recovery of the African humanity is a prerequisite for the recovery of the humanity of all the people of South Africa, black and white. And by that African humanity, he referred to Ubuntu, but mentioned that Ubuntu doesn't only apply from African or black people, but to all the people, black and white. So that was the soundest foundation of jurisprudence that I could ever come across. And it was on the basis of that understanding that in 1923, the ruling party produced a Bill of Rights of 1923. There was no European, there was no American in that meeting of 1923 when the first Bill of Rights in South Africa was produced. In 1942, the Theodore Roosevelt of America and Churchill, they decided that human rights belongs to white people in Europe, not to Africans. And the ruling party produced the African claims, which demanded that African people are human too. They deserve human rights. And that 1943 document was the foundation of the human rights concept in this country, which led to the Women's Charter of 1954, and there was no European or colonial person there except progressive people like Helen Joseph. And then 1955, the people of South Africa, not the ruling party, produced the Freedom Charter, which laid the foundation for the present constitution, which contains a human rights. It's a human rights document. So where is this notion that if you interpret human rights, you have got to go to Canada, to Germany, to America, and read the books from those people? Human rights in this country was evolved by the people through the people's struggles. Now, which means that we really, you must not just be an official. You must reduce your knowledge to writing, explain things as they are. Because for as long as we think that human rights can only be understood as they are understood in Canada or in Germany, that's where our people think that the legal system has nothing to do with them. So human rights derive from our common humanity, both black and white, and that's the jurisprudence that we must keep across. You know where I come from Bulawayo. The Queen says, "Mori gwawo onare mulogo mumie," which means we have a common origin, all of us. And then she says, "Wuhosi givat matukugi mataga," which means there is no kingship that can exist without the people. And the principle of equality is put by saying, you know, when the leaves of the tree are dry, they fall down. And gimadaga, and which means no person, gilidaga. So which means all the people have worth and dignity, all the people are equal. So all the principles that you think you can find in the Roman books and other things, they are there in our languages. So our languages are important, and DG, we are happy that you have taken seriously this idea that indigenous languages must be studied, because they carry the soul of the people, they embody the people's sense of justice. So you are taking us in the right direction, and we must thank you very much. I wish it was November. This would be our Christmas gift. So you gave us the gift much earlier. I'm told that you really deserve a tea break. How long? 5 minutes tea break. Thank you. The next one? Oh, the DG, the DG. Thank you.